testify. Come up in the spot looking extra fly. For the day I die, I'ma touch the sky. Gotta testify. Come up in the spot.
Welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD. It is a old school hip hop hump day, a way back rap Wednesday right here on the Triple Option with RBKD. You can always hit us up via Twitter. I'm at Rod Babers in the Twitterverse. KD's at KevinDunn01 and BK's at Brad Kellner in the Twitterverse. We got a lot of different topics that we'll get to throughout the day. Go ahead.
That song's overrated, man. I'm sorry, BK. I just gave BK the thumbs down. I think that song's overrated. He's giving me crap for it. You got to be the deciding vote. Do you like that song?
Yeah, that's overrated. I mean, Jay-Z. Yeah, Jay-Z. Jay-Z's going through phases. I tell people this all the time. Everything Jay-Z did wasn't good. There's just, in retrospect, now that Jay-Z's married to Beyonce and now that he's approaching being a billionaire, there's this view that every rap album that Jay-Z did was hitting hard and everything he did was awesome. And it wasn't. He was great. He was awesome, but he was great. But everything he did wasn't elite. All of his albums didn't bang. He did have some bangers, but they all didn't bang. He wasn't Pac, where everything he put out was hot and heat and fire. It wasn't everything. He wasn't Big, where everything he touched was fire and platinum. No, it wasn't everything. He wasn't even Eminem, in my opinion.
No.
But he was a nice MC and one of the greats. But I think there are a lot of guys ahead of him that whatever they touch seemed to be instant platinum. And I don't know if Jay-Z was always fired and flame to me. Remember how Eminem lit him up on Renegade? I think he get lit up by a lot of people. I love Jay-Z. I'm just saying, people. I think he's a little overrated as an MC, but as a business mind and as an icon, he's something else because he transcended just hip hop alone. With basically just marrying Beyonce more than anything.
So,
but also an investment mind, I should say, behind the scenes.
I love that take. And I do love Jay-Z. I think I like Jay-Z more than you. But I love when you get fired up about that. Is that Jay-Z or is that Kanye, BK?
It's Kanye West.
Okay.
Oh, that was Kanye?
I can hear the Jay-Z that he's talking about with that. Can you hear it?
No.
But you also like the song.
Sorry.
All right. Rod, anyway.
That's your fault, KD.
What? KD's the one who told me Jay-Z, so I got wrapped up.
Did I say Jay-Z?
Did you say Jay-Z?
Oh, I didn't know. If I did, then I'm sorry. That's my bad.
Oh, boy. All right.
Either way.
KD said Jay-Z, and that's why I jumped on the
Either job. Way, either way, we
I thought that's what happened.
Doesn't matter. We still
maybe
hear
I'm wrong. Did I jump Jay-Z first?
It was probably on me, but it doesn't matter because we've heard the song before, and regardless of who it is, we just don't like the song. That's all I was asking for.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. Because I guess, Jay-Z used that beat before, and I guess that's what...
Jay-Z's used a lot of different beats.
Do you still feel the same way, Rod, now that you know it's a Kanye West song? Because you're still the deciding vote on whether or not that was a good choice by me to play there.
I don't have any problem with your choices. Honestly, you play whatever you want. I mean, but I went off on Jay-Z because I thought it was a Jay-Z discussion. And if it wasn't, then that's my fault. I apologize.
It doesn't matter. It was still good anyway. I love that take. So keep it up, brother.
Yeah, if I just went off on a random Jay-Z take, I apologize. It had nothing to do with Jay-Z. I'm just picking on Jay-Z for no reason. So my bad. But anyway, all right, getting back to Texas football discussion here. This is interesting. I saw this. Chip Brown does a really good job over at Horns 247. I was with his Insider Reports and also his Morning Brew. And this story that came out yesterday, actually, He points out that Casey Thompson, after the Alamo Bowl, that historic Alamo Bowl by Casey Thompson, ended up having an amazing game. I think he finished the game, 8 of 10 for 4 touchdowns in that game, just coming out with scorched fire, scorched earth, if you will, in the second half against Colorado. And he points out that after that Alamo Bowl, right after that, Casey Thompson went to Phoenix to help his father, Charles Thompson, who is a former quarterback at Oklahoma, but also is now one of those quarterback coaches, runs quarterback clinics and does a different kind of individual quarterback coaching. And he went to Phoenix to work with his dad with his quarterback clinic. Then he went to Miami to work out with some players who were preparing for the NFL draft. While the rest of the Longhorn teammates were beginning their off-season time off, Thompson was looking for every opportunity to get more work, says Chip Brown in this piece. Without having seen Thompson in the Alamo Bowl, he says, I don't believe Sarkisian even utters these words on January 2nd, the day he was announced as Texas head coach. I'd like to say that this is a talented roster. There's plenty of good football players on this team to go with, to go win a championship with. Your thoughts, guys, as we go into an off-season. This is something we haven't talked about because Sam Ehlinger has been such a saving grace for Texas football, being able to have that starting lockdown, that starting quarterback spot. And even before him, Shane Buechele helped Texas get out of that quarterback hell. What are your thoughts? I'll throw it to you first, BK. What are your thoughts about the quarterback competition overall, especially with Casey Thompson coming off the Alamo Bowl? Chip Brown says here he's been working in the offseason, trying to get as much work as possible, not only working with his dad, but also trying to go work with guys who are taking it to the next level and going to the NFL. Casey Thompson said he didn't have to get ready for the Alamo Bowl opportunity to play when Sam got hurt because he stays ready. Does Casey Thompson have the advantage coming off of that Alamo Bowl, or Sark come in with a clean slate with him and Hudson Card, hell, and even, I guess, Charles Wright thrown in the mix and allow those guys to go battle it out for the starting quarterback job?
You know, Rod, even before the Alamo Bowl, I would have told you that Casey Thompson would have the leg up over Hudson Card going into 2021 just because he's been with the program longer, right? He's been here 3 years. Hudson Card was only here last year. So I would have thought that, yeah, going into fall camp or, hell, going into spring practice, that Casey Thompson was going to get the first few reps with QB1. But then he has that phenomenal performance in the Alamo Bowl, KD, and it feels like it's Casey Thompson's job to lose. I don't think Sark's going to, like, announce Casey Thompson as the starter anytime in the near future, but it feels like Casey Thompson is the more likely guy at this point, and he probably should be.
No, I definitely think he's the most likely guy and the more likely guy between those two. And look, I mean, that was my biggest takeaway, and it was the biggest long-reaching takeaway after watching the Alamo Bowl, was that, man, we thought this guy had some talent, and you just didn't know where he was with his development, but he looked really good. And he's obviously not a finished product, but having a guy like Sark come in and being able to work with him, there was some accuracy, there was some balls he threw that I think told all of us, because we haven't had the luxury to see this guy at all, because there was never any separation in games for blowouts or anything like that, and there was no spring game this last year, that we got a ball player. And Rod, I mean, that makes sense. That's an interesting comment that you read, that the thought is that if it wouldn't be without that one guy, Casey Thompson, and what Sark saw in that game, then he would not have made a statement like that that could open himself up, like Tom Herman opened himself up by saying, hey, this team's ready to win right now.
Yeah, I mean, he said there are plenty of players on this team to go win a championship with. But honestly, minus Sam Ehlinger, Joseph Osai, I guess, and that was, you know, and Sam Cosby. So your three best players. you know, we thought this was a really talented team last year that was able to make that move, and it was mostly because they had a veteran quarterback and they had veterans at key positions. That's not going to be the case. We know there's talent on the 40 acres. I mean, go look at the recruiting rankings, and I'm not going to go back and look at them. But, you know, I think 247 Sports does their blue chip ratios, where they basically try to give you a percentage of blue chips on your roster, 4- and 5-star recruits. And Texas last season had the 5th most talented roster in all of college football. Yeah. Now, of course, you're going to lose Sam Ehlinger. You're going to lose Joseph Sain, Sam Cosby. I get it. But still, you're going to be at least top 10. Still most talented roster in college football. And like, you got a bunch of Jags and scrubs out there.
Right.
So I think the biggest thing for Sark is going to be figuring out who your quarterback is. And this is not third. We don't have third world quarterback problems like we had prior to Shane Buechele, really prior to Tom Herman. People don't really want to give Tom Herman props. I understand that. The wound is still fresh. But the truth is, Tom Herman did one thing that was really, really good and very progressive for Texas. He really infused that quarterback room with a ton of talent to anticipate the transfer rate. He anticipated the injuries, to anticipate guys changing positions, which all happened, by the way, under Tom Herman. Mm-hmm. And yet still the quarterback position, the quarterback room, mostly because Shane Buechele and Sam Ehlinger, I'll give them most of the props. But even the thought process for Tom Herman recruiting 2 quarterbacks every other recruiting cycle, it allowed Texas to replenish that quarterback room with tons of talent. And now, yes, you don't have Sam Ehlinger there. We all wish Sam would have came back and we'd gotten that 5th year, and then the expectation will be much higher. But now you do have a Hudson Card. You do have Casey Thompson. There's talent there. It's not a battle of attrition like it was at one time under, you know, Gerard Hurd going up against Tyrone Swoops or David Ash and Case McCoy. Love those guys, but you guys get my point.
For sure.
Now it's a true quarterback competition, a high-level competition. This is one of the most talented quarterback rooms in the country.
Yeah, and you've got Charles Wright, too, coming in.
Yep.
So you're replenishing a little bit, and I assume Sark's going to try to get one or two more quarterbacks committed and signed for the class of 2022 as well. Can I ask y'all this? Hopefully you say yes. If you said no, I don't really know where I was going to go with that. But
sure.
I guess
I was
the
just
silence.
Thinking of Cade Klubnik being one of those
silence.
Guys. But yeah, continue.
Yeah, I hope he is. That'd be awesome. Do y'all think that, and this might be an unfair conversation to have because Texas is going from Tom Herman to Steve Sarkisian, so this might be an unfair shot, if you will, at Sam Ellinger. But, KV, I'll send this your way first. Do you think maybe the ceiling for this Texas offense can be higher under Casey Thompson than it was under Sam Ellinger? Like, maybe the floor is a little bit lower because we got so used to Sam Ellinger. We knew what he was capable of, and for God's sakes, he was one of the best quarterbacks in program history. But maybe the ceiling with Casey Thompson and what his skill set can provide, do you think there's a chance that it can be higher than what we've seen with Sam?
Absolutely, I do, and it's not even a shot at Sam because a lot of that is going to be the different offense and a guy who's going to come in and really try and maximize the talent they have. And so I think we're going to see a lot of the things that all three of us have been begging for and really did a lot this fall. You know, just different things you see offensively all over the country. I don't want to say progressive, but stuff that Tom Herman wasn't doing that I really think hurt Sam Ellinger. Plus the offensive line, at least, so you're talking just career there, not so much next year, right?
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, the offensive line should only be getting better and should continue to be more of a real stabilizing force for this team. And offensively, I just think what Sark's going to bring in, that it's going to allow him to really show his stuff. And so, yeah, the ceiling is going to be higher or should be higher, and I'm not even sure that's a direct comparison of Casey and Sam.
Are you talking about just Casey Thompson here, or
yeah, just Casey
Carson Cutson Card, just Casey? I think that because the offense is going to have a lot more cheat codes, right?
Yep.
Sark talked about his RPOs, and his offense starts with the RPO concept that's going to be big, and we all agreed that Tom Herman should have been using more RPOs with Sam Ellinger. Used a ton of them late in the season. Against K-State, you saw a ton of RPOs, and maybe that's because Yersin was calling the plays. Who knows? But it starts there with Sark, and Sark calls those the passing plays in the RPO concept when his quarterback chooses to play. He calls them opportunity throws because he basically said it's a high, there's a high probability or high opportunity rate of a success rate of a successful throw because it's going to be a wider window open for you. You're going to be throwing against a man concept a lot of the times once you're able to read that defender. You can tell just the way he talks about it and talks about building the offense and layering the offense. He thinks about it through a quarterback's viewpoint, right? Through a mm-hmm. quarterback's perspective. And Tom Herman, I don't think he would do that oftentimes. I know he wasn't a quarterback by trade, but, you know, I guess it does help to build it through – to build your system through the quarterback's eyes, therefore making it quarterback-friendly. As Lincoln Riley said, if your system ain't quarterback-friendly, then you need a new system.
Right.
And I think for Tom Herman, you needed a new system. And oftentimes Tom Herman's offense, the pro spread, it was ultimately a failure of imagination and a lack of common sense at the same time. Right? The lack of common sense was, hey, give the ball to your best player. Play your best players. Wouldn't do that. So lack of a common sense. And then there was the failure of imagination, right? Not enough cheat codes. Not enough RPOs for Tom Herman. Not enough. I don't think he had enough imaginative play designs to scheme guys open, as we talk about, right? More pre-snap motions and shifts. More compressed formations and bunch formations. All these things are things that Sark does with regularity. They are part of the DNA of Sark's offense. So ultimately, yes, the offense will be better with Sark. Casey Thompson's ceiling higher, much higher under Sark than it would be under Tom Herman, as any quarterback would be right now, because Tom Herman is stubbornly rigid, and his rigidity often leads to his quarterbacks hitting a ceiling. And that's what you want. You want your quarterbacks to shatter the ceiling. That's what you saw with Mac Jones with all the cheat codes mm-hmm. that are applied by Sark.
That's well said. I think that's the best description of Tom Herman's offense I've ever heard. A lack of common sense combined with not enough imagination.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty descriptive of especially the last 2 years' worth of offense that we've seen from Texas. Man, I would have loved to have seen Sam Ellinger with Steve Sarkisian, right? Just the skill set that Sam has. And look, he's an all-time great at Texas. He set a lot of school records. He's top three and top five and a ton of other statistical categories, too. Felt like those two could have made some magic happen. But, yeah, I agree with you all. I mean, just having Sarkin here and that offensive mind and his ability to be creative and scheme guys open and make things as quarterback-friendly as possible, combining with what you said, KD, where it feels like the personnel around him is going to be better and going to be more properly developed. It feels like the ceiling for this offense is higher over the next couple of years than what it's been over the last couple of years.
Yeah, and maybe at the end of the day, it's a better fit for both, meaning that Sam did actually have a better fit with Tom Herman, as frustrated as he probably was with the offense, and not the total fit, because some of the things they were doing just needed to be fixed, and that's with a running quarterback or not. But Tom Herman, the type of quarterbacks he had, it does fit the skill set of someone like Sam Ellinger.
Yeah. Can I play this?
Yeah, no, it does. In 2018, BK, we saw that, right?
Yeah, 2018, no,
that was the prime
did.
Example of that. Was the pinnacle. That was the zenith of Sam Ellinger's bromance with Tom Herman. But it didn't build on that, right?
No.
It didn't build on. Even 2019, everybody figured out Bam Bam Sam. LSU came in, and Ed Orgeron even admitted, oh, we knew when Bam Bam Sam was going to run, and we knew exactly when he was going to run. And TCU kind of admitted the same thing, right? They knew what the plays were going to be. Essentially, Texas became predictable, and their patterns became way too rigid. They became way too rigid in their patterns, and they never really broke. They never really broke tendency. They didn't break tendency enough, in my opinion. And it worked in 2018 because you had a combination of elite blockers, right? You had that Calvin Anderson on the line with Andrew Beck as your fullback / H-back. And you had think about the wide receivers you had in 2018. Mm-hmm. You had Colin Johnson, Lou Jordan Humphrey,
Duvernay's your third.
That's your third wideout, dude. All three of those guys could beat man-to-man coverage consistently. So when you had that combination, it was perfect for a Bam Bam Sam. But you lost some of that in 2019. Lost even more of it in 2020, and you never saw Tom Herman either replace those weapons, or you never saw him evolve the offense, and that's what happened. You're right, though, KD. He hit it hard. See, 2018, I don't know if you get a better Sam Ellinger than 2018 Sam Ellinger. That was elite. That was Heisman Trophy worthy any other year.
You don't, and I think we try to talk about it, and we try to be honest, and it's hard real time because you don't have the real answer, but you can try and diagnose it, and part of the problems this year, BK, was also Sam. Sam's regression. So maybe, at the end of the day, I'm kind of putting a ceiling on Sam and who he is, but I think we knew that all along.
I'm going to cry. This hurts just thinking about what could have been with that roster a couple of years ago.
Oh, man. I know.
And also just thinking about, like, if Sark had those weapons. Like, that's not what 2020 Alabama had, but, man, there's some dudes.
There's some weapons to play with.
There's some dudes on this current roster. There's no doubt. There was no Bijan on that 2018 team. So there's a lot for Sark to work with, and I'm excited about what he can bring to the table. All right, I want to play this one quick cut of audio. Give you some Sark sound, because he was asked about the quarterback competition, and he was asked what he wants to see in his quarterbacks at the start of spring ball. Here's Sark.
Well, I think for me is, you know, we're very early in the stage. You know, I've got a chance to watch some tape on both of them. I think they're both really talented players. The key to the drill to me is, one, I just want to make sure they've got good leadership skills at the start here. Two, that they're coachable, right? You want to be coachable early on, because clearly we're going to teach some things that are different than what they were taught before. Not that it's right, not that it's wrong. That's just the way we go about it. So if you've got good leadership qualities, you're coachable, right? Meaning, hey, we're going to ask you to do something maybe a little bit different. Can we get those things done? Can we do transition? Then it'll work itself into the arm talent, the decision-making, right? The accuracy, the ability to make throws under duress, all those things will start to show itself up. But it's going to start with the leadership, which they both possess a lot of, and then we're going to get ourselves into coachability, right? Can they really absorb what we're bringing into them? And then can they go out and start to execute it once we get going? So it's very early. It's probably too early even to say all that, but we've got a long way to go with the position.
So there's Steve Sarkisian. That is from Friday. KD talking about looking for leadership and looking for a coachability as well. Very interesting stuff from Sark there.
Yeah, coachability. I like that. And that's talking about ceiling stuff more. How much growth can we get out of someone?
The ceiling is the roof.
That. and not so much talent. So usually when we talk about ceiling, we're talking about, okay, well, either physical growth or just talent in general and how much better can they get. But all of that kind of comes together with the coachability at quarterback. I'm not surprised. When I hear that, you know who that sounds exactly like? Rod, it sounds exactly like Norm Chow. And that's what he wanted. He wanted coachable quarterbacks, and they're going to try and do everything they can at that point to protect that quarterback, but also knowing that there's different avenues they can hit because he is coachable.
Yeah, and I think he, like all coaches, he wants, you know, that quarterback to be to think like him and be, sorry for this word, aligned with his vision.
Too soon.
Yeah, I know. Break those quarterbacks out, or break all the players down and build them back up in your own image as a coach, where they're just, you know, little versions of you running around, more athletic, but still thinking the game through like yourself. And that's what Sark wants. Ideally, you would love your quarterback to be on the sideline communicating things to you about the offense. I remember it made me feel good about Tom Herman and Sam Ehlinger, but obviously in retrospect, it didn't work out like we all thought. But I remember Tom Herman telling me that Sam Ehlinger was telling him things that he didn't know about his own offense, the pro spread, and that was enlightening to him. That was edifying to have Sam Ehlinger, you know, revealing things about the offense that Tom Herman hadn't even thought of. That means he had totally immersed himself in the offense and knew everything about it. He was as interwoven into the offense as any coach or any play caller, and that's usually a really good thing. And it didn't work out for Sam, but that's what you want to hear as a coach. You want your players enlightening you about the game ultimately, and then you know that, okay, this guy here intellectually, their football acumen is on my level. Now they're seeing the game like I see the game.
A bunch of little Norm Chows running around. That was always my dream. That was always my dream as a kid, just seeing them go left and right and go with all those concepts.
Dude, weird dreams, dude.
Yeah, I did have weird dreams. Norm Chow couldn't get a head job for a long time for one reason. Curt Schilling's not in the Hall of Fame for one reason. We'll hit it next.
Like that five-star recruit at Kentucky, he's been here and he's gonna stay here. It's one and done time. Here's Kevin Dunn.
Let's go one and done time here. I hate when baseball makes news for bad reasons, but I'm not sure that it's gonna be bad in the end because it'll at least allow people to talk about this. And one of the things, so there's three guys obviously that did not get in that I think should have gotten in. That's Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, and Curt Schilling. Now Bonds and Clemens, we know why. They're both at about 61% because of their ties with steroids and illegal drugs, or sometimes not even illegal drugs, but drugs that the definitely Major League Baseball looked at and said, well, you're getting an unfair advantage, and even if it was not illegal at the time within the sport, we're still going to punish you for that. My problem with this, guys, and before we get to Curt Schilling stuff, obviously is how do you pick and choose? We talked about it a little bit earlier. There are some guys that are in that I would guess, and once again, we're guessing, are as guilty as Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. When you have a whole era of guys where the cloud's going to be over them, you either got to make the decision, we're not putting any of those guys in, or we're going to put those guys in, and anytime there is something that's reported, so with Bonds and the whole Balco issue, then you can, or Clemens with was a biotech or biogenesis thing, mm-hmm. then you can put that as part of the story. So I'm not here to try and be the Texas fan, and I've known Roger a little bit. We're not friends, but I've hung out with him a couple times with events.
Damn, and bro, he told me y'all were friends. You're telling him.
Well, if he says that, then yeah, we're boys. Okay. We're boys. No, but he was always really, really cool and nice. And so personally, I've got nothing against the guy, but I do believe that he was probably roiding up from, my guess would be Toronto on, and he may have been even doing it at Boston. But once again, as I'm talking about this, that is the issue. We're all guessing with it. So it's either got to be all of them or none of them. So that's why Bonds and then also Clemens should be in. The Curt Schilling stuff is really bothersome. Now, if you're not on Twitter or you're not aware of what Curt Schilling has done after his Hall of Fame career. And yes, it was a Hall of Fame career. Don't give me the 10 wins per year because he was on some crappy teams. I saw the guy pitch in Philadelphia, saw him pitch in Boston, saw him pitch in Arizona. And certainly with what he did in the end in Arizona and Boston, this guy was a Hall of Fame pitcher, was a big game pitcher. He was one of those guys that just takes it up to another level, but he also had some years that with the numbers, it puts him in. I've run into a couple baseball people that would disagree on that, and they're kind of the elitists that I was talking about earlier, that BK, they don't help the sport. But I haven't found much argument before we get to it and why he's out that says Curt Schilling on the field was not a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, people are trying to make that argument now.
They are now.
To justify the reasoning to not put Curt Schilling in the Hall of Fame, but the real reasoning is what you're about to get to. I mean, you're dead on. This dude was without question a Hall of Fame pitcher. Also a Houston Astro grade as well. Don't forget about that 1991 season down in H-Town.
Oh, I forgot about that. That was before Philly, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, because I remember he was young on the 93 team.
Uh-huh.
And then, but you know, Curt Schilling, he was the real deal. And you can go through the 22 years of what he did. I'm not going to bore y'all too much with the numbers, but the guy is a Hall of Famer. The reason he's not in, if you've not been keeping up or you're not on Twitter, Curt Schilling has had, and this is just me personally talking, some real idiotic tweets at times. And to me, it even separates from the political part. Now, I do think the political part is part of this. He is a right wing and he is a conservative. And there should be nothing wrong with that in America, just like there is nothing wrong with being a liberal or a Democrat. Now, some of the tweets outside of that have gone way too far for me. And it makes me question who he is, kind of, and does not seem like the type of guy on some of these situations you want to have a conversation about. Some of the stuff is also just political, though. And some of it, I feel like, all of it gets lumped together and put together. And the reality is, if you're keeping him out because he's right wing, that's wrong. And it's also hypocritical for these writers to do that when a lot of these guys that are already in are conservative. So I know some of these baseball writers will say, hey, we vote for conservatives all the time. They just keep their mouth shut about it. Is that it? So he's been vocal on some stuff, which even if I disagree with him, or anyone disagrees with him, he's got every right. And then he's had some tweets that have gone too far, and you can talk about that on Twitter, keeping him off. But for tweets to keep someone out of the Hall of Fame, when once again, I will mention guys like Ty Cobb, I'll throw one out here right now that Tony Gwynn didn't have the best reputation as a human being in terms of treating people very well. And that's from people that I know that played with him, played against him, and then also coached against him too when he was at San Diego State. Well, Tony Gwynn should still be in the Hall of Fame. Being an a-hole does not keep you out of this thing. And just having flagrant or in my opinion, at times, ridiculous tweets also doesn't keep you out. It's hard for me to pull out some of those tweets and also a majority of his statements, which are very right-wing.
Yeah, I mean, this is not a Hall of Fame for people, right? This is a Hall of Fame
for
baseball players. And all of the tweets and comments that you're talking about happened after Curt Schilling's playing career came to an end, right? Like, maybe it'd be one thing, we talked about this a little bit earlier, maybe it'd be one thing if Curt Schilling was making these outlandish comments and being an a-hole during his playing career, and guys across the league didn't like him, and media members didn't like him, and fans didn't like him because he was a jerk and he was spewing, you know, controversial stuff. But none of that was going on during his career. At least we didn't know about it going on during his career. Like, this is all after he finished playing baseball. It should have nothing to do with whether or not he gets into the Pro Baseball Hall of Fame.
Right. I don't know if you've seen some of his tweets. One, and I went and looked at a couple today, and he's taken his Twitter down, thank God. And thank God for him. He does not need to be on there. But he said vaguely comparing Muslims to Nazis, and that was a meme. I mean, there's been some stuff that I know people have taken it and run with it, but just on the surface was flat out wrong. Is that enough to keep him out of the Baseball Hall of Fame?
Hell, with the council culture, we're dealing with a different beast altogether, right?
Right.
Nobody's really used to how much power the social media mobs and the council culture have. I'm with you. I was always under the assumption that your individual character is not something that should be able to ultimately influence whether you're in the that athletic Hall of Fame. And the NFL, of course, has decided to not even pay attention to that kind of stuff and not even open that Pandora's box, so they understand that it's a very slippery slope. Because then retroactively, once you learn, say you learn 10, 15 years later after somebody's died and passed away that they were doing something.
They were a rapist.
They were a rapist or doing something crazy. Then you got to go back and take them out of the Hall of Fame.
Right.
Once you open that Pandora's box of character, so I'm with you. I don't know why baseball wants to have this very sanctimonious view of it. They're making this thing a lot harder than it needs to be.
Yeah, they are. And so I was looking at the rules for voting, and this is a BBWAA rules for election. And those are the writers. So that's a long acronym. Mm-hmm. So the voting shall be based upon the player's record, playing ability, integrity, sportsmanship, character, and contributions to the teams on which the player played. All that sounds good, but they haven't been voting on that for a long time. That may come into it if a guy needs to get that extra bump to get over because his playing ability doesn't really put him over. But we haven't seen it work the other way. We're a-holes, and I could mention a couple from talking to Major League Baseball players that they've got no character or integrity, at least if you talk to other majority of baseball players. But BK, they got it.
And once again, the stuff with Curt Schilling happened after his baseball career.
Yes.
So like, it'd be one thing if this was going on throughout his entire career, but because it happened after the book should close on whether or not a guy is a Hall of Famer or not, then this shouldn't be taken into consideration at all.
No, and we're obviously, when they're talking about that, so they say it should be, the vote should be based on player's record, playing ability, and they have integrity and character. I think a lot of that has to do within the sport. So integrity in terms of cheating, which actually kind of goes to why Bonds and Clemens are not in there, and I still think their playing ability is enough to push them past there, but we're not talking about, like, someone's character at home, right? Because we wouldn't know that. I mean, it's their character as a baseball player. And as BK mentioned, Schilling never had any problems with that. In fact, he won the Clemente Award, mm-hmm. which is BK pointed out. That's kind of baseball saying you have good character. I think a lot of this happened after, and most of it happened after, and I'm not going to sit here and defend a lot of his tweets because they're idiotic and some are hateful.
Yeah.
It still doesn't keep you out of the Hall of Fame. We have to be able to separate that, and you hit the nail on the head. We've got cancel culture. I mean, I saw a bunch of tweets saying Mike Stoops shouldn't be here, not because he's been a crappy defensive coordinator for the last 15 years, not because he was combustible, not because he hated Texas more than anything, because he had a MAGA hat on. Like, in general, in life, hopefully now that all this stuff's over with Trump gone, we can get to a point, and I say this as an independent, where Republicans and Democrats can cut this crap out because it's not healthy and it's not going to move us in the right direction. That's as a country and certainly in the sport of baseball.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It's troubling for me that they don't want to be courageous in this moment and side with the truth. And side with reality that, yes, the cheating happened. These are the players involved with it. But let's go for it and tell the story of it. And let's do it in a tasteful manner. I don't think they want to have that awkward conversation.
They don't.
And I don't think they want to come up with a really creative way to do it. And if they don't, man, I would be really, I'd be shocked if they don't in the last year for Barry Bonds and Curt Schilling and Roger Clemens let, I don't know, at least one or two of those guys in. And if they, like you said, if they let one in, they got to let all of them in. That's it too. So you can't be picky and choosy when it comes to that, but I guess exactly what they're going to do.
So anyone that saw that with the voting, integrity and character, and you've probably read that, you've probably seen that a couple times, there's no way that can be for outside of the diamond because you're not going to be able to find that out. You're not going to find out if someone is a really good husband or a really good dad. And lots of people put on acts like that. Now, Curt Schilling on Twitter has certainly kind of told us who he was. I wouldn't throw integrity or character to describe from what I've seen him on Twitter. But BK, it was after he was playing. And when I see that, That is more talking about Bonds and what Clemens did that affected the sport, not what Schilling is doing with the dumbass tweets.
Don't you think the writers should take their own advice? I think they should look at their own rule book and have some more character and integrity on this thing.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. They should always be the bigger ones,
yeah.
And they're not. They're small. They try and be on a high horse, but they end up looking like small, kind of petulant kids.
Agreed. Good stuff. One and done. Pretty shocking news dropping yesterday. No players in the Baseball Hall of Fame for the class of 2021. The first time that no one will be inducted into Cooperstown since the Kennedy era, guys.
Yeah, I don't know how people keep up with that stuff.
Like, Kennedy?
No, I know people keep
He's
up
been
with
dead
Kennedy
for a while, dude.
Like holding these grudges against another political party, and I'm not going to go see that movie because they gave this. Like, it just seems tiresome to me, man. Like, life's too short, you know.
No, it's getting worse too.
Yeah, it is.
I think people assume that. Everybody wants to blame a lot of our problems on President Trump and thinks everything's going to go away, that now Trump's gone. And I think they're going to realize quickly that it wasn't he was a symptom of the issue. He wasn't the disorder itself.
Yeah, no, we got a lot bigger fish than that.
337-3776 is the Specs text line. There's one and done here on the Triple Option with RBKD. We've got Off the Record coming up. Our friends from
China
apparently have a new way to test for COVID. And it's really accurate, but also really gross. I'll tell you what it is next.
DD Mega Doodoo. I'm sorry, Mangoodoo.
Once it's turned on, the sign will spell out Deli Cat Essen.
Well, I don't get a break my head comb.
Well, congratulations. Continue good sex in the Big East. Thank you, Jimmy.
And boom goes the dynamite.
It's time for another edition of Off the Record.
Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. F***ing thing sucks.
Welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD. Time for a little Off the Record. This is a COVID-related story from the Washington Post that actually may be a breakthrough in the COVID studies, actually in determining whether you have COVID and COVID testing. So it comes from the Washington Post. The story says months-long lockdowns, entire city populations herded through the streets for mandatory testing. The people of China could be forgiven for thinking they had seen it all during the coronavirus pandemic, but a new breakthrough in COVID testing now has the Chinese people facing another indignity, the addition of anal swabs. yes, now anal swabs. They believe Chinese state media outlets reports the new protocol in recent days prompting widespread discussion and a little outrage. Some Chinese doctors say the science is there. Recovering patients, they say, have continued to test positive through samples from their lower digestive tract days after nasal and throat swabs have come back negative. All right. So they say everyone involved, of course, is a little embarrassed by it, but even Chinese doctors in support of the new test said the method's inconvenience meant it only made sense to use in select groups, such as at quarantine centers, because obviously you don't want to drive through testing with anal swabs. That probably wouldn't work out.
No.
Employees under further review.
Don't reuse
those. One doctor said, if we add anal swab testing, it can raise our rate of identifying infected patients. It said, but of course, considering that collecting anal swabs is not as convenient as throat swabs at the moment, only key groups such as the quarantine, those in quarantine receive both. All right, gentlemen, so your thoughts. Katie, we'll start with you.
Thanks.
What are your thoughts about the new testing strategy that is taking effect in China. To go from throat swabs to now anal swabs, which they believe might be more accurate in detecting coronavirus?
Yeah, well, it'll get rid of all the BS, I guess. I don't know. Reading this story was pretty funny. And look, however you can get it. My biggest question is, so we heard this. Now, I didn't have that bad of an experience. Rod and I didn't because we're old and we're tough. But BK had a really tough experience.
Yeah, you guys are really tough.
Yeah, well, we are old. Whenever you got the swab in your nose, and you weren't the only one. I've heard a lot of people say, man, that thing really got deep. How deep does the anal swab get?
Oh, I got that information for you, actually.
It
said that A stool sample should be taken from patients, and if that is not possible, to do an anal swab by inserting a cotton-tipped stick 3 to 5 centimeters, which is 1 to 2 inches,
thank you,
into the rectum. And that's how they would get it.
Okay, 1 to 2 inches. I mean,
oh man,
1 to 2 inches. BK, that's not
that
deep.
That's not that bad.
Man, hoes got fisted.
You've had deeper.
Good one. Good one there, sir. I'm out on this, gentlemen.
Oh, come on. No,
so
you can't be
out
on
this. What do you mean I can't be out on this?
Oh, you're out on doing it.
Swab.
I thought you weren't going to talk about it.
Oh, no, of course I'm going to talk about it. I don't talk about anything. Are you kidding me?
That's what I thought.
I am out on doing this. Give me the nasal swab, dude.
Yeah.
Yes, I had a bad experience when I got the nasal swab done. She was digging for gold. She was in there for way too long. But I'd rather someone be in there for too long than someone be down there for too long, okay?
Maybe the anal swab's right for you. I mean, Rod and I found out that the nose one's good with us. Maybe everyone's just different.
Yeah.
Or maybe some anal swab type people.
Yeah, you know, the beauty of being my age and not being y'all's age, and maybe y'all have not had to go through this yet, and if you don't want to mention it on air, that's fine, but I have not had to deal with Dr. Jellyfinger yet.
I have not.
Okay.
But I'm right there.
Yeah, I haven't had to get that
checked. Yeah, we're close.
Yeah, I haven't had to get that, and I still have a few years before I have to worry about that. And I'm hoping there's some sort of advance in medical technology that prevents me from ever having to get that test done. Because I don't want anything in there. I don't want another person. I don't want Q-tips. I don't want things in that area, okay? That is sacred for me. So give me the nose swab over the rectal swab, as they say.
Using the whole fist there, Doc.
Man, hoes got fist.
I am going to watch Fletch the night before, Rod. The night before I finally have to do that, I'm going to watch Fletch and just have all those lines ready for the doctor. I'm sure he's never heard those.
Exactly, right? Yeah, doctor has never heard the guy come in there trying to be a comedian while he does it to ease the tension. First of all, everybody should go get the prostate exam. If you should get the earlier the better. I haven't, but I need to get that done. So does KD.
Yeah.
It needs to be done. I know guys talk about it and joke about it, but you know, the sooner you find out something like that, the better off you'll be. So you should. If you hadn't gotten checked out and you're approaching 40 like me and KD, or you passed it, get it done.
I'll take
you got to get it done too, BK.
I'll take death.
You'll take what?
I'll take death.
Oh, no, you won't.
Over that.
No, you won't. Get it checked out.
You
man.
Guys are the ones who need to get it checked out. Y'all are at the age.
I know,
Come
and,
on,
we're,
man.
And we're saying we're going to. We're going to.
I'm going to get it checked out.
I'm sure y'all
I
are.
I am. I'll let you know what, and I will report back. How about that? Okay. I'll make it my rant.
Facebook
of the day
Live.
One
Let's next. Do Facebook Live. Do that'll be great for the audience, huh?
By the way, guys, this new science, though. If you guys remember, they've been studying this for a while in China. I say for a while. The pandemic's only been going on for a year. But they have long thought that there was a more accurate way to test or for COVID and for the symptoms of it, or at least, you know, through the scientific testing, they always thought you could do it through basically waste water management is how they were testing it before. Remember, there was the University of Arizona, and I believe Arizona State in northern Arizona did it too. They started testing it first. They were testing the sewage water of the dorm rooms. And they found several students who had COVID before they ever did any testing. They had no COVID swabs in the throat or anal or whatever. No swabs at all. All they doing was they were testing sewage wastewater from the dorm rooms, and they were able to not only find out which dorms had a breakout or had people that had COVID, but also almost be able to single out exactly where they were in the dorms based on their sewage management system.
That's
it was
crazy,
fascinating.
Man.
It was all about poop and everything, so it's kind of gross. But they were finding COVID in the poop earlier this year in northern Arizona and in Arizona. So it makes perfect sense, this story to me.
Yeah,
like that. Yeah.
It makes perfect sense, but who's that person that says, you know what, we should check the stool?
Yeah, I mean, I guess
the stool has a lot in it, man.
It's like the
stool can tell you a lot about a person.
Lobster.
He'll tell you a lot, man. That's why your doctor wants to see it all the time. Bring in a sample for me, please.
It makes sense, but are we really out here trusting Arizona and Arizona State with anything related to intellect?
STDs, I would
if it's STD testing,
that.
Maybe I'll listen.
Arizona State's been studying that for years.
Yeah, anything else, I don't know if I'm putting my faith in those two schools. But that's fascinating, man. I wonder if this I don't know if we call it technology. I don't know if we call it advancement. This procedure finds its way to the States, and I'd love to hear what the reaction of Americans are if someone tells them that, no, the best way, the most efficient way, the most accurate way to get COVID tested from here on out is getting something inserted up your rear end.
At least they're not using it for both.
All right, we're going to make sure, better safe than sorry. We're going to start with the anal one, and now we're going to hit the nose. We're going to have to get back there.
Which one do you want to start with?
Hey, and if it smells too bad, that's on you. It's your diet.
Oh, my God. I'm about to throw up.
All right, you brought it up. Let's go to break.
I'm about to throw up. Rod brought it up, man. Rod, that was Rod B.
That's a good story.
That's a Washington Post.
Yeah, that's a great find, man. I would like to investigate more, but, you know, I don't think I really want to.
Nah, I'm good.
I think I've had enough.
I think I got the story.
There you go. Off the record here on the Triple Option with RBKD. When we come back, we'll get back into some sports. We'll recap the heartbreaking loss for Texas basketball at the Flon last night. And also, a legendary Dallas Cowboy calls it quits. We'll tell you who next.